We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This podcast is made possible by a generous grant from the hottest April that we've had in a decade. While other sponsors are looking to promote a business for your money, the hottest April that we've had in a decade gives you a gentle, persistent sense that the seasons are unraveling, like a cheap jumper. Be committed to delivering record-breaking warmth, year after year, more warmth than you're comfortable with. And not just warmth, but a warming sense of dread. Not in a way that definitively proves climate change, but enough to infuriate those who see it coming as others around them say, well, if this is climate change, then I really like it. Because why have climate change when you can have more and more climate stagnation? Enjoy longer summers, shorter winters, floppier springs, and that fun new game where you try to remember what month it is supposed to be based entirely on vibes alone. Thanks to their ongoing support, you can experience autumn leaves that refuse to fall out of sheer confusion, mosquitoes that have simply decided to stay, and the comfort of having regular and reliable once-in-a-decade events happening over and over again, because inconsistency is inconsistent. We love consistent weather. So whether you're sweating through what used to be jumper weather or explaining to a child what seasons were in the before times, remember to thank the hottest April we've had in a decade, proudly funding content, quietly ending changes in climate. But look, as thankful as we are for the hottest April we've had in a decade for their support, this really is only possible due to generous support of loyal listeners slash viewers like you who continue to make this all possible over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff, where you will be given the chance to fund and support the bullshit arts like a real patron. You know, the people who have their names on the wall at an art gallery, except this wall is made out of nonsense. And all of the displays are questionable at best. And of course, realistically, none of this would be possible, nor necessary, without my ongoing live shows. So first off, I'd just like to thank, well, I'm gonna, definitely thanks to Melbourne. I know I need to thank Melbourne. I'm pretty sure I need to thank Adelaide at this point, but I don't remember if I did that previously. But just in case I didn't, thanks Adelaide, and thank you Melbourne for coming out and supporting my brand new live show, Jokes, about the time that I got detained in America and other stories. This has been a really fun season, just to see who turns out, what people are interested in, and how they respond to the jokes. I think this show's in a really good shape, and I'm keen to get it touring again, but there will be a little bit of a break in the tour schedule for that particular show as I remount one of my old shows and go to some new places and some new festivals. I'll be taking my old storytelling and stand-up show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, to Brighton for the Brighton Fringe, actually as part of Brighton's own free fringe, which is very exciting. Very first time that's ever happening, so I'm looking forward to doing that. Then I'll be off for a one-off show in Switzerland on May 23rd at a place called Basel, Switzerland, at the Beast Comedy Club. And then off to Prague for the Prague Fringe from May 25th until the 29th, so pretty much the end of the festival there, at which point I will be travelling home, and I will be forced to travel through America due to the ongoing war in the Middle East. So maybe, if I get back anytime soon, there'll be more to tell you about the time or times that I got detained in America. We will see. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Now, let's get into the headlines. Jacinta Allen has declared public transport in Victoria will continue to be free until the end of May, and then half price until the end of 2026 as the state government expands its cost of living policy while fuel prices stay high. Begging the question, ticket inspectors, what are they doing for the second month in a row of basically having no work? Surely these people earning roughly $80,000 a year, they won't be doing nothing for another month. We don't like that kind of behavior in this country. We call that bludging. But good news, my friends, good news. I got out there and I did some digging and I found out. Ticket inspectors will be redeployed answering Centrelink phones during the time of free public transport so that they can continue using the basic skills that they've developed, you know, hassling students and the elderly and the poor. We wouldn't want all these hard-earned skills to go to waste. A manager for the bakery chain Olds in UK was in court for stealing in an attempt to pay back a drug debt. Law enforcement said the sticky-fingered manager had been on a roll as they whisked away $120,000 Australian dollars in voided sales. The manager was left blazed and confused when mystery shoppers unraveled the voiding operation, which should have left them rolling in dough. When asked about how they got away with the embezzlement, their manager said, "It was a piece of cake, and then a few dozen coffees, and then a bit of bread. Oh, and of course, some strawberry tart jelly." National Tea Day has just passed, with many honouring the UK's love of tea, culture, and tradition. The day was established to coincide with Queen Elizabeth II's birthday. It promotes brew more, do more by encouraging tea parties, afternoon teas, invading foreign countries to break their monopoly on tea, and knowing that you won't have to deal with Americans because they refuse to take part in tea culture. A place called Infinity Trampoline Park in Inverness, Scotland has announced that it will be closing its doors next month. Locals said the news was disappointing, but was all part of life's ups and downs. Owners said starting any business was a bit of a leap of faith, and ultimately blamed rising costs, saying the trampoline business had way too many ups and not enough downs. But unlike most businesses, they were unable to bounce those costs onto customers. Despite how it all ended, they do say that their experience was uplifting. South Korean police are seeking to arrest Bang Si-hook, the chair of the agency behind the K-pop band BTS, regarding an investigation into allegations that he illegally gained more than 150 million Australian dollars in an investor fraud scheme. When asked how he'd managed to get away with so much money, the police simply said he was smooth like butter, like a criminal undercover. UK children aged 17 or younger will face a lifelong ban on buying cigarettes as the tobacco and vapes bill clears Parliament. It's kind of like how they made it impossible for young people to buy a house, but this time for good instead of evil. The landmark legislation aims to stop anyone born after January 1st, 2009 from taking up smoking by making it illegal for shops to sell them tobacco. Or at least until a Conservative government gets in power and undoes it in a desperate attempt to get the vote back from an extremist party gaining numbers in the polls. An example of rules for thee but not for me. Youth will not be exempt from the smoke politicians blow up their constituents' asses, or the ancient and entirely overdone practice of engaging in smoke and mirrors to escape difficult questions. Seems the only people likely to be entirely disadvantaged by this smoke ban are Gen Z ninjas looking to escape an assassination attempt using a smoke bomb. The White House has unveiled plans for a gold-accented giant arch dubbed the Arc de Trump that Donald Trump once built in the nation's capital. If approved, the 250-foot monument would be taller than the US Capitol building and the Lincoln Memorial, and feature a golden Lady Liberty-like torch and crown atop two giant golden arches. Finally, a monument that truly represents American values, size, ego, and the ability to upgrade your large fries for only 50 cents. So good news, America, you're finally getting a national landmark that you can order a drive-through from. On Truth Social, Trump said he's loving it, and it'll be a wonderful addition to the Washington, D.C. area for all Americans to enjoy for many decades to come, or at least until the ice cream machine breaks. Research suggests Australia's under 16 ban on social media isn't working. What? No! A generation of children raised on YouTube before they could speak have outsmarted politicians in an online space? How could this possibly be? More than 1,000 children aged between 12 and 15 who were surveyed were still using the same accounts that they had before the ban was introduced, but only if they were willing to do some pretty extreme behavior in order to hold on to it, like pointing their camera at video game characters, pulling silly facial expressions, wearing an easy-to-buy $22 old man mask, or even a Guy Fawkes mask, or any other cheap party costume like a fancy mustache or a big fat nose and glasses. Now, this seems to be a clear indication that the social media ban has been a conspiracy put together by lobbyists from the costume shop and big Groucho nose and glasses after decades of irrelevance. The survey suggests that it would be a high-stakes gamble for countries like the UK and other places to follow suit at this stage, as the ban didn't seem to have a clear positive or negative impact on children's well-being. So that makes the ban a lot like bananas in pajamas, really. Sure, it's fun to talk about, but we can't really know either way if anybody's benefiting from this. Iron Maiden, Phil Collins, and Oasis are among the British artists to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. Liam Gallagher previously dismissed the Hall of Fame, declaring he wasn't interested in receiving an award from some geriatric in a cowboy hat. But after growing into a geriatric in a bucket hat, he engaged in a classic bit of Gallagher behavior, telling his younger self to get fucked and calling him a stupid cunt who wasn't famous enough to be accepted by the Hall of Fame anyway, saying he's one of the biggest cocks in the universe. Classic Gallagher's. Will they ever learn to get along? Colombian officials have authorized a plan to cull dozens of hippos descended from animals brought into the country in the 1980s by Pablo Escobar after they displaced native species and threatened local villages. Of course the hippos have found Colombia a delightful place to live. What's not to like? No natural predators, a bike that can break a man in half, unlimited access to the former estate of Pablo Escobar, and all of the grass and crops that they can eat. Sounds like a treat. The Environment Minister, Irene Viles, said the decision was reached because other methods to control their population had been expensive and unsuccessful, including neutering some of the animals or moving them to zoos. The hippos have become a tourist attraction, with local residents offering hippo spotting tours and selling hippo-themed souvenirs. But look, if the locals are worried about losing tourists' money, they can still make money from a destructive force that has had a devastating impact on the local ecosystem. They can simply switch to selling CIA-themed tours and bobbleheads. Former Doctor Who star Shuri Gatwa is set to receive an honorary doctorate from the University of Glasgow. So that story again, the actor who played the Doctor will become a Doctor of Acting. He's gone from Doctor Who to Doctor Wherefore Art Thou, Romeo? Detectives are searching for a white van after containers of cooking oil were stolen in an early morning raid in the Scottish town of Moray. But you know what they say? When the cops try to find a van from a crime, that's in Moray. When the black market thrives on canola supplies, that's in Moray.
When a van gets away with your deep fry supply, that's in Moray. With my loot's not gold bars, but a vat full of lard, that's in Moray. That's in Moray.
Apparently Mark Zuckerberg has an AI version of himself in order to converse with staff. The AI clone is being trained on his mannerisms and tone, as well as his public statements and thoughts on company strategy. Staff say they first started to catch on when suddenly the tech CEO started seeming a lot more human and relatable. Trump said it's not possible for the federal government to fund Medicare, Medicaid, and childcare costs, which is hard for those who are hoping for basic necessities that most countries provide, like compassion, medical aid, and not being left to die in the street. His argument is that it should be up to the states to take care of those programs while the federal government focuses on military spending. Given the US is in a perpetual state of not war war, maybe it is best that he doesn't gather all of the children in one place. If he doesn't send them all off to war, then he might be tempted to bomb one of the schools just to prove a point about why he should have won the Peace Prize or some shit. His exact words were, "How can you expect me to have the largest army in the world if you provide people with their basic needs? Nobody's going to want to sign up there." A 20-year-old woman has been convicted of a graffiti charge for sticking googly eyes on a sculpture in Mount Gambier. Amelia Vanderhorst pleaded guilty to the charge, saying she had been under the influence of MDMA and 3 liters of vodka. In Amelia's defense, 3 liters of vodka and MDMA is actually the rider for every Australian band after Cold Chisel came into existence. They even wrote an unreleased song about it. Cheap vodka and 3 days of rubbing up against your friend's skin because it just feels so nice. Obviously, it wasn't released because even in the 80s, songs about rubbing up against people were very unacceptable. Amelia was ordered to pay $2,000 as compensation and to complete 60 hours of community service. You can read all about it in the latest issue of That's a Bit Harsh, Cunt magazine. This month's issue focuses on larrikinism. How many liters of vodka does it take to change it from an Australian value to an excuse to act like a bit of a shithead? Proposed new laws will allow police to move on people for causing anxiety without actually having committed a crime. The proposed Queensland law, of course Queensland, would give police powers to move on troublemakers from designated public spaces. No word yet on how we will use these laws to move on PSOs, landlords, and charity muggers, but I'm sure Queensland's government will figure out those answers eventually. The bear on the coat of arms of Swiss region Canton Bern will continue to display its red penis. The cantonal government has ruled. The bear wang is a tradition that goes back at least 600 years and has been represented in this way since the 15th century, making it the only flag in the world that triples as a flag, an unexpected dick pic, and the unofficial flag of the manosphere, making it both an old-fashioned and a modern-day phenomenon at the same time, a true cultural marvel. In a move away from Japan's self-imposed post-World War II pacifist policy, Japan's Prime Minister overhauled its defense export rule, allowing the international sale of Japanese-made arms. These will include warships, combat drones, missiles, Gundam suits, Godzilla eggs, and you know, those big anime swords that the Japanese like so much. A new health campaign, Beat Cancer Off, wants men to masturbate 21 or more times a month. And you can remember this new campaign by using its fun new rhyme. Here we go. 21 days, have a wank. Wank, 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 have a wank. Apparently, the study shows that men who ejaculate 21 or more times a month may reduce their risk of prostate cancer by up to 22%. So parents, please knock before you enter your teenage boy's room. They may be in the middle of administering life-saving medical treatment. The campaign consists of an original song, an animated video, and the first ever smartphone app to track and prompt masturbation. They're still working on an app name, but the top names on the list are Yugu, Stroke Tracker, Jerk Fit, Palm Pilot 2.0, and of course, Goop 2.0. And that last one is my favorite. The trial between the ACCC and Woolworths has begun in federal court, where the ACCC has accused Coles and Woolworths of engaging in, quote, marketing magic in order to make consumers' money disappear. As a result of the court case, thousands of Australian shoppers could receive up to $1,300 in compensation if Woolworths is found guilty of misleading pricing tactics, or, as it is known in modern economic terms, barely enough compensation to cover half a week's worth of groceries. The Albanese government has declared it will be making major cuts and changes to the NDIS in the upcoming budget after Health Minister Mark Butler says it was costing too much and growing too fast. The government said disability support isn't natural gas, therefore we can't just give it away for free. Come on, guys. The government did say it was open to hearing suggestions about how to further fund the NDIS funds for the 160,000 recipients who were being cut, saying that they could continue to receive funding if they agreed to have their new limbs converted into WMDs and go and fight Australia's most dangerous enemies, such as protesters, whistleblowers, and refugees seeking asylum. Butler said it was important that the recipients being kicked off the scheme were done so with dignity, because for some reason it's easier and will get more votes to kick disabled people off the NDIS than it would be ever to tax large businesses in order to cover the cost. What a strange world we live in. Dozens of clowns marched through the streets of Bolivia's capital to protest against a government decree that limits extracurricular activities in schools, threatening their livelihoods. Which is tough, because when governments think essential services, they think hospitals, transport, mining, politicians, if we're lucky, education, and very rarely, guy in suspenders honking at a balloon dog. Clowns on strike does feel like the most on-the-nose protest imaginable. You know, clowns marching in the street because society has decided that they are no longer necessary. It's less a rally and more of some sort of live action metaphor. And somewhere in La Paz, a man goes to the doctor and says, "Doctor, I feel terrible. My industry's collapsing. The government cut extracurricular activities. The world lost its sense of joy." And the doctor says, "Treatment is simple. There are dozens of clowns marching through the street right now. Among them is the great clown, Pagliacci. He will cheer you up." The man says, "But doctor, I want to finish this punchline, but I am Pagliacci, and all of the clowns are on strike, so I cannot tell any jokes." And finally, another assassination attempt was made against US President Donald Trump. A man attempted to enter the White House correspondents' dinner and opened the Strait of Hormuz, if you follow my meaning. The world watched in horror as the attempt was thwarted by the Secret Service and left us all wondering, why the fuck does America even have all those guns if it can't even shoot one despot president? Yeah? What happened to Sic Semper Tyrannis? Trump wants his head on a coin, no? This is definitely the fastest way that I know of to get it there. So hurry up, champ. We're all waiting. That's the end of the headlines, though. Let's move on to the bigger stories, starting with Coalition Crackdown News. 2026 is a big year for elections. South Australia had the first of the elections of the year, which proved that One Nation's particular brand of stupid chaos statements, specifically crafted not to help everyday Australians, but rather to help Pauline Hanson from ever having to do another regular job ever again, which in this day of job instabilities is kind of admirable. I mean, you need an employee who is able to adapt to the needs of the modern market, right? So even if those needs are like absolutely batshit crazy, you have to give her points for being this sort of flubber-like entity who has the ability to always be flexible enough to fit into any mold so that she can always be the most racist person in the room. And that really scared the coalition. It gave them a good shake-up. So much so that they went and changed leaders of both parties, like they were redecorating for some kind of racist Christmas where your uncle is even more insufferable. Desperate to impress new opposition leader Angus Taylor has attempted to prove himself by showing the world that he isn't soft like Susan Ley or openly abhorrent like Peter Dutton. This isn't your granddaddy's coalition. Those voters, they all went to One Nation, so couldn't be. In an attempt to assert his new leadership style, Angus said he wants law enforcement to identify, track down, and deport those illegally staying in Australia, promising a coalition government would crack down on visa overstayers, deploying an ICE-style immigration task force, claiming there were 65,000 such non-citizens and that standards in Australia's immigration system had been eroded. You might think that I am being hyperbolic referring to it as an ICE-style crackdown, but to be honest with you, even Sky News is calling it ICE-style crackdowns. They even made it the main headline of this story because they think that it's a good thing. Such strange ideas that they have over at Sky News. Or at the very least, they know that it's going to, you know, get a decent collection of either angry clicks from both racists, happy thinking that something's being done, or from progressives sharing it on social media with a worrying amount of exclamation points in the post. The policy's plan is to take the pre-existing Australian Values Statement document, which is already signed by visa applicants, confirming that they will respect Australian society's core principles, including democracy, the rule of law, freedom of speech or religion, equality of opportunity, and that most nebulous ideas are fair go. So what are we even talking about here? They already have made a commitment. There is no need to enshrine this shit in the Migration Act and then make it the basis for deportation. That seems a little bit unhinged. His plan is reining in immigration on the basis of, quote, Australian values, end quote, and empowering law enforcement to chase up those abusing Australia's visa system. Really? We're doing this again. The whole Australian values shtick. This has never worked. Why would you do this again? Well, wait, hang on, sorry. It did work once. One time for like 9 years. But it was a different time when John Howard did it, you know? Like, the world was a very different place. Patriotism was not quite enough to send us into a not war war for 20 years, you know? We had to scare up some boogeymen, right? And John Howard wasn't even good at the whole Australian values thing. He pontificated in his best nationalistic jingo that the four principles on which we have and will base our government are self-reliance, a fair go, pulling together, and having a go. Principles that he couldn't even stick to, even though he made them up. He should have made one of the values, fuck off, we're full. He's so committed to that idea. He lives it every day. Even now, he's committed to the idea. Listen to this old man just relentlessly pontificate about this stupid idea.
John, I agree with you. I mean, you will know that I was never in politics. I was never comfortable with the concept, the doctrine of multiculturalism.
If I was going to make up some bullshit principles and try to force people to live by them, I'd at least make them stuff that was easy for me, myself, to stick to. Stuff like, all right, let's see, a healthy disrespect for authority, especially John Howard, right? That one, I think we can all stick to, no matter what side of the aisle you consider yourself on. Unless, you know, it's someone in a high-vis vest, they can still enter any place without question. You will not be able to change our mindset on that. No problem. The principle of no worries. You know, we don't need to worry about anything. You know, be it climate change or the loss of funding for science in the arts, doesn't matter. Hakuna Matata, baby! No worries. It means no worries, you see. Free up public transport. You know, standing clear from the doors on public transport so that people can get off before you get on. And of course, that most Australian of values, she'll be right. The national strategy for every problem, every crisis, and slow-moving catastrophe, she'll be right. I feel like those are some principles that we can stick to. I do kind of understand the fear of immigrants. And just between us, just that. There was a wave of them who arrived here in like the 1700s and refused to abide by the local culture. If only the indigenous people had a ICE-like task force to put these illegal immigrants into detention on an island somewhere, maybe like Rottnest Island, where then we wouldn't have to worry about the coalition floating a plan that many have compared to Donald Trump's ICE task force. Or another proposal, to screen travelers' social media accounts before granting visas. Are you kidding? Who have we become? Who have we become? Usually it takes 5 to 10 years for us to turn into America, but look at us. Look at us. We're smashing it through this time. This is like a speed run, you know? Presumably looking not for signs of anti-Australian sentiment, because let's face it, nobody who lives anywhere, not even in Australia, possibly a couple people in New Zealand, even know who our politicians are. So that's not something that you could look for on social media. But rather, I guess, to look for signs of Australian values, to show that they are implementing those nebulous values that we want so much. So have you posted a tweet admonishing America for not putting gun laws into place moments after a mass shooting has happened? Have you done that? Then come on in. You just exhibited Australian values. Did you call someone a cunt unexpectedly, but in a friendly manner? Congratulations! You've exhibited Australian values, cunt! Come on in! Don't feel left out, locals. This isn't just an immigration issue. Certainly not. This isn't a single party issue either. Oh, no, no, no. Enter ASIO. Hi, ASIO. What sort of fresh horrors do you have for us now? Well, back in July 2025, there was an extension of ASIO powers to detain suspects without judicial warrants and with limited access to legal representation, which was rammed through the House of Representatives in just 2 days, with the full support of government and opposition. And I thought opposition's job was to oppose. In another case of bipartisan unification to fuck the citizenry, like sort of if Voltron Lions came together and then decided to join forces with the monsters in order to take over Earth, you know? Or if like the Planeteers summoned Captain Planet only for him to go ahead and decide the best way to save the planet was in fact to take the rings of his own creation, wear them himself, and lay out furious anger down on humanity for their inability to live in harmony with the planet that birthed them, and then begin a harmonious and yet furious reign of Mother Nature. By your powers combined, I'm Captain Fuck You! Legislation set to make ASIO's compulsory questioning powers permanent is before the Senate after passing the lower house in mid-February 2026. February 2026? Shit, that's this year! Fuck! Oh no! That's not great, guys. It's not great. This time it is Labor championing the reform as they continue their slow transformation into the very thing that they have fought against for many, many years. But as we all learned from Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, you either die a hero or you live to become the villain. And as the coalition grows into a giant multi-headed hydra of terrible opinions and suppression of democratic freedoms, but some of the heads are red and then some of the heads are blue, and despite sharing the same body, the heads will actually fight furiously for dominance, calling the other heads out of touch with the common man, it becomes harder and harder to express your distaste with the mighty beast, lest they send their minions and goons to take care of you. And it'll be much easier for said goonery after this legislation further broadens the scope of the nation's chief spying agency's ability to question non-suspects for up to 24 hours. The Australian Security Intelligence Agency Amendment Bill No. 2, 2025, seeks to make permanent a set of laws so controversial that they've been subject to a sunset clause ever since they were first introduced. And despite that, have been debated and renewed every 3 to 5 years. So presumably, members of parliament are just looking to make their job more efficient by skipping over the need to vote for the legislation again and again and again. Maybe. Is that the reasoning that we're putting forward for all of this? This does paint a clear picture of where the future of the country is going, as the legislation faced significant resistance from the then Labor opposition. But that's typical opposition behaviour. Loud, blustering anger when you aren't in a position to do anything, and then as soon as you get into power, do everything in your power to uphold the status quo, where the party you formerly fought against now tells you that you're going too far or not too far enough. And every decade or so, you like change roles just to keep the illusion of democracy alive. It's a fun game. It's real fun. Super fun. They also committed to this much faster than in the past, when there was at least 2 days of debate before the current amendment was passed, and the original ASIO Act amendment was debated for 15 months. So you can't say that the government isn't getting more efficient in very specific areas, which will help when future budget cuts come up, because you'll notice some things, like NDIS funding, Centrelink, and Medicare changes, be they positive or negative, are debated furiously and at length, wasting hours and hours of taxpayer money for effectively no change. However, automatic renewal of invasive powers with no debate about how it will impact regular people, whoop, that is good value for money, baby! You'll probably want to know what these new powers will look like. And that's fair. Often, like Jaws, the original Predator, and the original Alien, we don't get to see the form that our oppressor takes until it's too late. But when it gets literally shoved in your face again and again, like Jaws 3D, Alien Resurrection, Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, and the often overlooked Alien vs. Predator vs. Jaws vs. Batman vs. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles : Smash Time Superfight. Warrants to detain and interrogate need only have the approval of the Attorney General, who almost always acts on the advice of the security establishment, so that shouldn't be hard to obtain for them. And unlike police detention for suspected crimes, where suspects or persons of interest or any random person grabbed off the street can refuse to answer questions, those apprehended by ASIO are afforded no such rights. If someone detained by ASIO refuses to speak, that becomes a crime for which they could face a summary judgment and up to 5 years imprisonment. 5 years in prison for refusing to speak to ASIO. That's fucked. I believe refusing to answer the questions of a gang who just grabbed you off the street is your civil duty. Would I give you that advice in court? Frankly, you'll never find out. Because while lawyers are technically entitled to be present during questioning, and I am no lawyer, their ability to interact with and advise their clients is directed by the ASIO officers conducting the interrogation. Which doesn't seem like a conflict of interest at all. No, certainly not. If I've learned anything over my years as a citizen, it is that the police have never once taken advantage of being given extra powers with little to no oversight. Why would we give them jobs where they can have such horrid and devastating impacts on people's lives if they can't be trusted? Right? Right? So, definitely no need to worry your weary little head that if ASIO decides the lawyer present at an interrogation poses a security risk, that lawyer can be removed. Certainly not going to be an issue for you. And do not even think of worrying your button nose and your dimpled cheeks that save for requesting clarification of questions or seeking a break to consult with their clients during questioning. Lawyers are not allowed to intervene in the ASIO interrogation at all. In effect, prohibiting a lawyer from advising their clients of their rights or guiding them as to how they may answer questions. And like the floors of the Severance Building, while lawyers are permitted to take notes whilst present during interrogations, they are required to surrender those notes to ASIO officers prior to leaving the building in which the interrogation has been conducted. Just take a second to process all that information, hey? Because that's pretty crazy. There's more, though. There's more. In some circumstances, the Attorney General can even impose conditions on warrants that give detainees no right to legal representation during questioning. Feels increasingly horrible. I think I'm getting back pain just hearing about it. But as it is also a crime for an individual to disclose to a third party that they have been detained and questioned in the first place, I hope you didn't have kids or a loving spouse or a job that was expecting you to show up at some point, as you will not legally be able to tell them what happened to you. So you'll have to face ASIO alone, regardless of if your lawyer is present or not. And as the old saying goes, if a lawyer sits in an interrogation room and doesn't make a sound, can they still charge billable hours? I hope you enjoy your representation from Schrodinger and Cat, attorneys in theory. Really more witnesses than lawyers, if you think about it. Because in this system, your legal representation exists sort of in a quantum state, both present and useless until observed. The moment they try to actually do anything, they collapse into a security risk and then they get removed from the room. So your defense is simultaneously there and not there, advising you and simultaneously not advising you, protecting your rights while quietly handing their notes over to the people questioning you, which raises a real philosophical question. If your rights only exist when no one is looking at them, do they exist at all? So until someone opens the box, you're not a citizen or a suspect, but you are both guilty and guilty until observed, where then they can classify you as the correct kind of guilty. Though, don't get cheeky and don't plan on anyone actually ever knowing about it, as it will also be illegal for your attorney in theory to tell anyone that they definitely didn't witness you being questioned. Moving on now to sound news! The National Film and Sound Archive is Australia's audiovisual archive, responsible for developing, preserving, maintaining, promoting, and providing access to a national collection of sound, radio, video games, new media, related documents and artifacts, film, and television. Obviously, we did have to remove Hey Dad from the archive for reasons that would get a fun little video like this demonetized if we had to get into them. And we had to remove all of Chris Lilley's shows because, well, they were just fucking shit, weren't they? New images and footage are added by a panel of industry and film and sound archive experts who vote on public nominations of recordings more than 10 years old. The latest vote saw the iconic news report turned meme, succulent Chinese meal added to the Sounds of Australia list, alongside other classic audio such as Joe Dolce's Shut Up Your Face, Marsha Hines' You, and the sounds of the pedestrian crossing button signal. The archive is a capsule collection of sound recordings with cultural, historical, and aesthetic significance and relevance which inform or reflect life in Australia. Important sounds like the Aeroplane Jelly song, the Louis the Fly song, Russell Crowe on Acropolis Now, and that vomiting scene from the spaghetti eating competition in Round the Twist, not to mention important objects like this! Beautiful Reckless Kelly Cup. Peak Australiana at its finest. However, there are some lost and rare broadcasts that the archives are still searching for, like recordings of Dame Nellie Melba's 1931 funeral procession, early demo recordings from artists like Slim Dusty, obscure folk music like this one from Ballarat local Frank Callahan. Let's just have a listen.
B-A-L-L-A-R-A-T.
Ah, isn't that nice? That's a song about a small country town that isn't I've Been Everywhere, Man. That is peak small country town music. You don't see that kind of thing outside of the town that the song is about. And I bet that good time family ballad isn't even in the archive. They're also looking for ephemeral or natural sounds, like unrecorded sounds of unique natural landscapes, much like the sound of an indigenous site being demolished by a mining company and then that being swept under a bureaucratic rug. Extinct wildlife like the Tasmanian tiger, or the sound of the functioning and well-supported working class. Uncatalogued personal content, personal VHS, cassette, or film reels. So this one's a fun one. Do you have embarrassing footage of a family member or someone that you hate that you want to preserve forever? You can send it to the archive and it will be preserved for all time. What a beautiful way to spend the day. Now, I had a little squiz at a little look-see, you know, a gander at the website of theirs, this so-called Archive of Australian Achievement, this documentation of digger daring do, this organisation of ochre output. And look, maybe it was me. Maybe I just fucked up this search, but I'm going to tell you, I couldn't find the iconic Stephen Bradbury win. And there isn't a more Australian movement than a white man stumbling into victory despite doing nothing to secure that position. This win is the very epitome of the lucky country mentality. How is this not in the archive? I was ready to be outraged that the archive had the 50th anniversary of Hey Hey It's Saturday. You know, the one with the blackface. But that doesn't seem to be in there either. Which is, I will say, a pleasant surprise. We aren't normally as good at not publicly displaying our shame like this. It's confusing, and frankly, it makes me a little bit angry. Turns out I don't like it when I'm pipped to the progressive post like this. But this is still a good thing, assuming that I haven't fucked it up and that it is actually in there. Among the greatest achievements of Australians, there are other missing moments that I couldn't find. No Marty the Monster versus Rex the Kangaroo? No footage of John from Play School flipping the bird? What sort of larrikin-less hellscape is this? On the plus side, Corey Worthington also wasn't in there, so swings and roundabouts, I guess. Moving on now to space news. While I was off doing the comedy festival, one of the best things on this planet has ever done for a long time happened, and here we are, let's be honest, desperate for positive news these days. And I have I'm a microphone and I'm going to use it, damn it. We went back to the moon, baby! Yeah! Double air horn! For the first time in 50 years, humans have gone out to the moon. Did they simply take a flyby to make sure that that DreamWorks kid in the moon isn't stockpiling weapons on the far side? And by DreamWorks kid, I do actually mean China. The Artemis 2 crew didn't actually land on the moon. Okay, so exciting as it was just a little flyby. some would argue, continuing a long-standing tradition from NASA of not actually going to the moon. But those people are mostly fools and bored with life. But the crew has the honor of traveling further than any human has in the history of mankind, also known as being the humans who managed to get the furthest away from the Trump administration, a doubly enviable position right now. Leaving the planet, even for 10 days, does sound like a real treat. I would totally be up for that trip. But just how far away were they really? According to the New York Times, they were almost 728 million dogs, 22-inch dachshunds specifically, laid nose to tail. But that is just America desperately trying whatever it takes to avoid using the metric system, surely. Though I understand at the moment why they're desperately trying to avoid using the imperial measurement system, like out loud, or just expressing imperial sentiments out loud in any way. Because it does make them sound like they're measuring up the world so that they can knock down parts of it to build their own ballroom. So right now, go nuts. Use any type of measurement that you want that isn't an imperial system. We don't need any imperialism from the US right now. In order to help them avoid this embarrassing measurement system while not having to use imperial measurements, we here at the Bearer of Weird News have devised some more civilized measurements for the distance to the moon. So, starts real simple with about 10 Earths. And moving on to something a little more complicated, about 12.8 million blue whales. You know, we can all imagine a blue whale, very large creatures. Most of us haven't seen a blue whale though, so that does make it a little bit complicated to imagine. So something's a little simpler, something that we see every day. 77 billion ants. Get a good picture of what an ant is. Although there are different types of ants, like bull ants, some ants are bigger than other ants. So maybe that's not the most relatable depending on where you live. So I think the simplest way to measure distance to the moon and back is 25,920,000 jiffies. I'll be back in 25,920,000 jiffies. But being the humans who managed to get the furthest away from Earth's ongoing stupidity, it won't be until Artemis 4 that the astronauts will actually be on the surface of the moon for the first time since the Apollo era. But aside from updating their computers to the latest models of Windows, ensuring that the fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror have fresh elastic, and updating the ship's playlist with some new space-themed songs that aren't just David Bowie, what are they going out there for? Well, they're out there to answer questions. And here is a list of the enigmas that could be clarified with realistic scenarios in the next 10 to 20 years by these various Artemis missions. What is the origin of the moon? Well, question that has plagued mankind since the first werewolves attempted to best us for planetary superiority. So we need to get an answer to this one. Too sweet. How much water is on the moon? And what is it like? And most importantly, who gets to bottle it and sell it to us? Well, the short answer here is yes. Yes, there is water on the moon. It's mostly ice. And of course, because it's a little chilly on the moon, so of course it's ice. But the issue with bottling it really is that we do mostly send white people to the moon. And as we all know, white people aren't very good at drinking water in foreign areas, foreign countries. They get barley belly, Deli belly, and any other series of rhyming bellies. Rhyming or alliterative bellies. And we are really risking them getting a bad case of moon belly if they try and drink some of this new local water, or if they use it as ice in their drinks or to wash a salad. Why is the dark side of the moon so different? Simple, it's dark. Next question. There are, of course, some harder and like more unknowable things about the moon that we must answer in the next few missions. Like, does watching The Wizard of Oz sync with a flyby of the dark side of the moon? I assume yes, but only if you start the trip on the third roar of the MGM line and take a heroic amount of drugs. Is the moon just Earth's emotional support rock? If the moon controls the tides, who controls the moon? Should we be worried about them? And should the US do a preemptive strike? Is this mission about science? Or are we just checking if anyone has claimed it while we weren't looking? Which, given that the American flag has now actually faded since that first trip up to the moon, are we just waving a giant white surrender flag? Or will Japan go up there and paint a little red dot on the old flag and then claim the moon and the original moon landing site? And if we plant another flag, does that count as further exploration, or are we simply rebranding the ownership of the moon? These are all important questions, and they must be answered. How long before the moon is rezoned for luxury, low-gravity apartments that no one can afford? And on that note, once we get buildings up there, will the moon become the next ultimate offshore tax haven? We are desperately running out of tax havens due to climate change, and no matter how much billionaires fuck up the Earth, the moon will always be safe from climate change. The mysteries of the future aside, Artemis II has a great honour. No, not by being the first drive-by of the moon in 50 years, another honour, if you could believe it, a greater honour. See, Artemis II is the first time that NASA has sent a toilet around the moon. Yeah, let's get the moon home, baby! Houston, we have liftoff, if you know what I mean. And sure, the toilet did break immediately, which is, I don't know, some sort of metaphor for humanity, I guess. But this is just what happens when you try and get a fancy toilet and don't go with a Japanese model. So the astronauts couldn't empty the toilet. So what was the original plan? How do you empty a space toilet? Well, the toilet was designed to vent or spew liquid waste into space, which, first off, gross. And because I know you are wondering, solid waste from the Artemis II toilet was actually sucked into bags and then sealed and stored in odor-controlled airtight containers under the floor. Oh, grow up! Where else was it supposed to go? These containers are kept on board and brought back to Earth for disposal rather than being dumped in space. Yeah? See? We are considerate. Elegant, dignified. It's only piss that we're recklessly throwing all over the universe, not poop. The only human shit that has been thrown into space is Elon Musk's Tesla. And this is a much better solution than we had for the first moon landing, where they ended up just leaving 96 bags of poop on the moon. Yes, that is true. It is a thing you can genuinely look up. It's one small shit from man, one giant shit heap from mankind. But it wasn't all poop on the moon, but we left a big mess up there. We left some space buggies, a hammer, a feather, photos, toys, and of course, those 96 bags of feces and urine. See, it's not just shit, it's shit and urine. It's true, look it up. Not now, do it later. The algorithm will get mad that you left midway through, but you do it later. 96 bags of poop, though. That's a lot of poop. That's a lot of feces, my friends. You know how it is when you move house, you always leave stuff behind when you move. This is just, you know, this is the same thing. It's just, you know, instead of going across suburbs, we're going interplanetary, intercontinental bodies, you know? Between us, I'm pretty sure this is why aliens don't visit us. Have you ever seen a house that has like a car in their front yard and then thought, oh, I should really go into that house immediately. I should find out exactly everything about that house. No, you avoid that house. That's what you do. You avoid them like a co-worker microwaving fish in the break room. That's us. We're the co-worker stinking up the office. We are the house with the car in the front yard. A car, and I cannot emphasize this enough, 96 bags of shit in our front yard. The moon is our front yard, right? I think we all agree collectively that the moon is our front yard. Yeah. Personally, I think there is life out there. Obviously, I don't think they will come and visit. But there is too much space out there for us to be the dominant intelligence in the universe. That would be an incredibly depressing thought. We aren't that good. We gave Andrew Lloyd Webber all that money and praise for creating the musical Cats. We can do better. But if they had visited us, the government was right not to tell us. Let's be honest, we aren't ready. We can't even handle the fact that some of our own species is a different skin colour or likes to fuck a different gender. We're not ready for aliens. I think that's why we left all that poop on the moon. To deter aliens from coming to visit us, because we knew that we weren't ready. They did go in the 1960s when we were at peak not being ready. So that actually makes a lot of sense. And that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening to the main episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. And I just apologize for the break. I'll do my best to do like shorter episodes when I'm on the road, but logistically it is quite complicated sometimes to do these things. But I promise I'll try and get back into a regular routine. Do check out the old bonus episode on the Patreon. You do have a bonus episode this episode. So if you want more of this, head over to the Patreon, patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff, and check out your bonus episode. This one's a fun one. It's all about the looming recession. And so hopefully that's to your taste. If you think you know somebody who would enjoy this, do share it with them. Anyway, do all the things that you need to do. Thumbs up, share in a space where you think someone will enjoy it. Tell a friend. Tell two. But I'll see you next time. Thanks so much. Bye.